Good morning and welcome to our roundtable panel for this Friday, the 20th of June. It is a delight to have you with us. I don't know about you, but I'm one happy puppy that it's Friday. How about you, Ray?
Agreed.
What was what you said during the weather forecast? Ah, lovely.
Oh, what a day.
Yeah, huh? Absolutely
beautiful.
Gorgeous.
Nice weekend ahead.
Spectacular.
High pressure and whatnot. Excellent.
That's absolutely, I'm glad you're happy. It's nice to have you happy, right?
I was happy. I just...
Joining me for the discussion, WAMC's ever happy Alan Chartok. Good morning, Alan.
Rough.
And
happy puppy.
I see.
give him a biscuit. Times Union Associate Managing Editor Mike Spain back with us. Thank you, Mike.
Good morning.
Good morning. Mike's always happy.
Right.
Yeah. And WAMC newsman Ray Graff, although by comparison to you two, you know.
Yeah. Yep.
Good morning and welcome to the program. So, man, what a news day yesterday. So let's go through all of these stories, and I don't know that it'll be a lightning round. We'll just try to do a bunch of stories today. We've got about 10 of them, so let's get to them. So we begin with the President of the United States making his announcement. We were talking about when an announcement would come, and it came around 1 o'clock yesterday afternoon. The president said that he would deploy up to 300 military advisors to Iraq to help its struggling security forces fend off a wave of Sunni militants who have overrun large parts of the country, edging the United States back into a conflict that Mr. Obama once thought he had left behind, warning that the militants pose a threat not just to Iraq, but also to the United States. President Obama said he was prepared to take targeted and precise military action, a campaign of airstrikes that a senior administration official said could be extended into neighboring Syria. So we've been speculating for a few days, Alan. We've been talking about what the president could do, what is right, what is wrong, and most people kind of shrugging their shoulders and saying we have no idea. So when you look at this action, it seems measured, doesn't it?
It seems measured. Of course, Joe and gang, you know what happens is that every time we have gone in anywhere, the advisors have gone first.
Right.
So we really don't know. I was fascinated by the fact that there's so much backdoor activity going on. I mean, you have the senior Ayatollah basically saying Maliki should go. And if not, he should be more measured in terms of letting the others, the Kurds, and of course the others into the in the Sunnis into the mix. So obviously, a lot is going on now. I'd love to think that when he says that's it, we're not putting boots on the ground, he means it. But we've heard this before, and that's what's so disturbing to me.
Don't you think, though, when you say that, that at this point, we're perhaps, and even the president, is looking for an answer that we just don't know yet, right? I mean, we can't really commit to that because we don't know yet.
Yeah. I mean, put yourself in Maliki's place and say to yourself, is this guy going under any conditions? How do you get him out of there? Do you bribe him? Do you pay him, you know, millions of dollars and say, just get out? How do you move him if he doesn't want to move? And we have seen this before. So that's a very tough one.
Mike Spain.
Well, what if he goes, Alan? I mean, won't there be chaos? I mean, not that there isn't chaos already, but I mean, is there any possibility of a orderly transition to a more moderate leader who would accept, you know, some kind of coalition government? Because that's his problem. He hasn't been able to do that.
I don't think it's not only that he hasn't been able to do it. I don't think he wants to.
Not at all.
Yeah, and so that's the big problem. I think the only way to get some stability is to move on, and have some kind of joint agreement between the Sunnis, the Kurds, and the Shia that makes everybody a participant in the game. And I think that's what we think as a government. I think that's what our government thinks.
Well, that's what the president said yesterday. But how practically does one do that, especially when insurgents have taken a couple of cities and are moving almost at will? Interestingly, this morning on Al Jazeera, seems to have a good handle on a lot of this stuff, Al-Maliki said, we're not counting on any support from the U.S.
Well, yeah, I mean, but you know, Ray, I think that that this is one of those great reasons that I'm terrifically happy I'm not president of the United States.
I second that.
I bet you do.
I wonder who could broker a deal here, and at what point some outside force, whether it be the UN, another Middle Eastern country, could step in and kind of get a ceasefire declared so that, you know, this could kind of stabilize without this kind of, you know, the momentum that it has right now could kind of be halted. Is there any entity? I mean, I'm thinking Iran is in a position to do that, and that's going to be very difficult for the United States to participate in that.
Sure. And what's the price?
Yeah.
And we saw Hillary yesterday, I believe, saying, you know, she'd be very cautious about playing games with Iran. And I don't blame her. You know, that is one that could really cross-cut you when you're running for president. So she's saying, okay, Barack, you're on your own, you know, on that one. I think you know, Iran is the Shia group that has, because the Sunni people, you know, Saudi Arabia and all the rest of them, they're not in a position to do anything here. They're scared out of their wits.
To me, there are many elephants in the room, and one of them is Syria. And the president said that this has implications for American policy in Syria, which so far has been shaped by the president's reluctance to get involved in a civil war and a complex civil war there. Meanwhile, a senior official said that the president would not hesitate to strike militant targets on the Syrian side of the Iraq-Syria border. So it seems as though we're also keeping our eye very, very heavily on that as well.
We may not have a choice here, Joe. You know, as much as each of us wants to stay out, and I certainly do, I really think it would be a terrible error to go in. There may be come a point when you have this sort of state which is amorphous and where all kinds of terror is coming from, because we know who these folks are and we know what they want to do. And we had 9/11 coming out of that very kind of situation in which the United States says, okay, you know, we have no choice except to do something very dramatic here.
We're going to take a break. When we return, we'll go to many other issues. We welcome your comments. Roundtable at WAMC.org. Roundtable at WAMC.org. We'll be back right after the short break.
Support for WAMC comes from Adelphi University Hudson Valley Center, a master's in social work program, a personal and in-person education in advanced direct practice, hudsonvalley.adelphi.edu. The Sembrick Bolton Landing, New York, featuring singers from The Seagull Colony in a 2014 season preview, June 25th at 1:30 p.m., sembrick.org. Pure Catskills, supporting local farm, food, and wood businesses, clean water, and working landscapes throughout the Catskills region, purecatskills.com. And Charles Padula, DDS, Union Avenue, Schenectady, providing comprehensive, minimally invasive dentistry for children and adults, accepting new patients, paduladds.com.
Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion this morning. Alan Chartok, Ray Graff, Mike Spain, I'm Joe Donahue, and we welcome your comments. Roundtable at WAMC.org. Roundtable at WAMC.org. House Republicans reached for continuity and stability on Thursday in electing a new leadership team, according to the New York Times, promoting a Californian of modern temperament to number two and a more conservative representative from Louisiana who has the loyalty of the Tea Party as number three in an effort to quell dissent in their ranks. In decisive votes that followed the primary election defeat last week of the majority leader, Representative Eric Cantor of Virginia, Republicans largely embraced the status quo, elevating Representative Kevin McCarthy of California to majority leader and replacing him as the whip with Representative Steve, is it Scalise? Does anyone know Scalise?
I've heard of Scalise. But
Scalise, yeah, excellent, that, yeah. of Louisiana, a leader of the House Conservative Bloc, so we'll certainly be hearing more of that name. I know there was initially after Cantor's loss and resignation, there was some scurrying, and then McCarthy sort of became the guy. So, Alan, what do you make of this?
Well, obviously, what you said is so. The third guy, Scalise, is the fellow who obviously is the was the sop to the right in all of this. And the problem, of course, is that you never know what's going to happen. I mean, I remember when the guy named Livingston got elected the speaker, and do you guys remember that? He became the Speaker of the House, and within days he was out because it turned out he had a girlfriend.
That was a flash in the pan.
Yeah, but and the reason that he had to go is because obviously they were all after Clinton for the same kind of activity.
Right, that's right. Yep.
So all I'm saying is you never really know what's going to happen. You know, a speaker goes because he took book money, and then the number three guy moves up, and that's when your chaos, which you've just avoided, happens. So that while they may think they've got it set, it may not be that everybody has been vetted properly and that it's all going to happen. It looks like this guy McCarthy is a vast improvement over Cantor, much more interested in the mechanics than in right-wing ideology to protect himself.
Well, John Boehner, rushed this election through, and some people have complained that he did that specifically so he could give McCarthy the edge and maintain somewhat of a moderate. Although people think of Boehner and Eric Cantor as being right-wing, in our Congress, they're the moderates.
they are, yeah. And it does appear that to many that Boehner's getting out.
That's right. That's being predicted for next year sometime.
So if he gets out, you can see what the problem for the Republicans are going to be, because they may have avoided ideological mayhem this time around. But that doesn't mean it ain't coming fast.
I'm interested by the first paragraph of this New York Times article Joe quoted, and they say they promoted a Californian of moderate temperament to number two. And I want to know how they got to that. In other words, I don't see the evidence in the article of why they consider him of moderate temperament. And also, it's interesting how the political pigeonholing begins almost immediately.
Well, my reading of that same article, Ray, and believe me, I spend a lot of time preparing for these shows.
Yes, indeed you do.
But I actually read the article, and they were pretty specific. They were pretty specific about how he had operated when he was in the California Assembly, and that he was a guy who brought factions together. He tended not to be out front. He tended to be very subtle, but to get results. And that's the classic way politicians who want to survive operate. So in choosing McCarthy, I think everybody who's there, they're scared of the Tea Party, all right. But in the end, they're more like him than they are like them.
Well, are they queuing him up to be the House Speaker? I mean, Boehner, is
no
he queuing
question.
Him?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And that would maintain a more moderate, still a conservative, but not an ideologue like some of the others associated with the Tea Party might be.
That's right. You know, guys, when things happen like this, you see strange bedfellows being made. For example, we were assigned as a part of our reading for last night by Joe was the Thad Cochran Mississippi race, right?
Right.
In which the black constituents in Mississippi are being called on to support the supposed right-wing senator against his more right-wing opponent. So and whoever ever thought, everybody's shaking their heads and saying, my God, in Mississippi you now have black leadership saying get out and vote for the less evil of these two guys.
I just want to, this is, we only have less than a minute, but sorry. But I think this Boehner question is, I don't A quick clarification on that. Is Boehner out because Boehner wants to be out or has to be out, or do you think, or is it just he feels that it is the best thing to do at this point?
Well, you know, Boehner's a very sensitive fellow. And as you know, we all know that that he gets weepy every once in a while, the rest of it. He's a guy who may just say, this is enough. On the other hand, you know, he's got to hold his head and say, how do I hold all of this stuff together? Because this is really wicked. So I don't know. The answer is I don't know.
We're going to take a break. When we come back, Alan, I know you've got some letters. You will compile those for us in the break, and we will go through them when we come back and get to many other topics as well. We welcome your letters, roundtable@wamc.org, roundtable@wamc.org. We'll be right back. Good morning and welcome back to our roundtable panel, and it is a delight to have you with us. Roundtable@wamc.org if you would like to join in on the conversation. Ray Graff, Mike Spain, Alan Chartok, all here. And Alan, you have been tasked with collecting the mail, and I know you have, so let us go to the mailbag.
Yes, teacher, I have. Rocco, our comedian in the group. Finally, the Republican Party has found someone who can properly represent their party. I believe that he is the grandson of the famous Charlie McCarthy. For those people, you know, of a different age, Charlie McCarthy was a dummy, you know, in a ventriloquism act. If this is so,
Edgar Bergen, Charlie McCarthy.
Yeah. If this is so, then it is genius. Someone should check his ancestry. Sarcasm intended. Rocco in Rosendale.
And then, subtle.
and then Bob says, "Hi, Roundtable. Regarding the potential outcome in Iraq, what are the panelists' thoughts on the lesser unwelcome for the U.S. conclusion to the current assault on the Shia-led government, a takeover of large segments of Iraq by the ISIS fundamentalists, or a similar takeover by the reconstituted Baathist Saddamists? And that's right, because it's." You guys know there was a major contribution yesterday from a former high Saddam guy who says, you know, we're on the way back, basically. and we helped make this thing happen. So that's right. And then Russell takes some exception to something I believe I said. And he says, a million deaths perhaps in Iraq from U.S. intervention, retaliation for 9/11. How many refugees? We may not have a choice. We always have a choice. Considering the misery, the lies surrounding our violent response, always leading to more violence, we have a choice. Your speaker from Rockefeller University, that was on Boxbop, never mentioned the UN. Will this drumbeat to military response never end? With warmest anti-fascist regards, Russ. That's what he says. Okay. And Tom. Hi, Alan. When do we as a nation and our politicians especially realize the fighting reality is always a losing battle? I tell this to my kids, by the way. Trying to instate a democracy in an area which is not populated by people whose sectarian religions rules their lives is a classic square peg in a round hole issue. They're not going to adopt democracy. Separation of church and state is a requisite for democracy. It will never happen. And then he goes on and on. But as you know, we have some rules on keeping it.
Yeah, paragraph or two is sufficient.
That's enough. Okay, and then we had something from Tony. When Alan, Ira Fussfeld, Mike Spain, and Rex were boys, we had FinCEN or financial syndication rules which forbade owners of the delivery of media content from owning and controlling the programs and content. Today, with Clinton Bush, FCC Chairman Reed Hunt, and Michael Powell, deregulation of cable TV, telephones, and all telecom, owners of the tubes that carry the coaxial fiber or copper wires which run on public rights of way can also...
I'm sorry, did we discuss this?
Yeah, this is... What show are they... What station is Tony listening?
Commenting on another show, I think.
Well, but yes, no, I think what she's doing is saying this is what she wants, you know, to talk about.
Ah.
I think that's right. But also, she just ran out of her space.
Yeah.
Although she goes on.
Coming up on
more.
The Tony Show, we'll talk about that.
right. And then there's one here from Henry. I haven't looked at this yet.
Oh, good. That's always safe.
What could go wrong?
I was wondering if any of you read the recent New York Times article about the arrogance of Dick Cheney. We actually mentioned that yesterday, which related his and his daughter's recent criticism of Obama.
We quoted that article.
Yeah, concerning the administration's handling of Iraq. Any thoughts on this? Yeah, you have to go back. How do you get yesterday's show?
You go to the website.
You go to wamc.org/roundtable, and it says panel, and you click, and there we are.
For a thorough discussion on that very issue. Okay, that's what I got.
Excellent. We're out of time. Thank you very much.
Drive safely, everyone.
Please tip your waitresses. Good night. Let's go to, it's been at least 3 or 4 hours since I've heard some good casino news.
If Mike Spain is here, what else will we talk about?
Mama needs a new pair of shoes. Oh, it's Mike.
What I find fascinating, I'll let you do the story here, but what I find fascinating about this whole thing is that, I mean, the deadline isn't just a matter of days, and the people coming in with requests and out with requests, and it seems like it can't be that haphazard, although it seems that haphazard.
It does. It seems like they're throwing these packages together. They're bringing in people, like the people in East Greenbush brought in a prominent area restaurateur who's going to cook for them and grow vegetables outside the casino. And now there's new details of a revived plan for the city of Rensselaer, which is right across the Hudson River from downtown Albany. They've kind of inherited the developers who were trying to get into Exit 23 on the south edge of Albany. That went kaplooey. And now the same developer from Rochester, David Flom, is teaming up with the Capital Region OTB with a casino developer and the Hard Rock Cafe.
Yeah.
And that
is what's so cool about that? You know, one of the stupider things in the world was to take the Albany train station out of Albany and put it in Rensselaer, right?
We were just having that conversation during the break.
right, exactly. I must have been out of the room.
You were out of the room.
And extraordinarily, we're about to do the same thing here. In other words, this replicates that kind of thinking. But here's the great thing. When people get off the train, they can go right to the casino.
Well, I think it'll bring people from New York City right to Rensselaer. You know, it'll be like the... And Rex Smith, when this first was proposed a few months ago for Rensselaer, said they ought to have a gambling train between New York City and Albany. You ought to put that into the statute. Sure. It would be, he said that facetiously, yeah. I should say.
Very dry.
But it would be an interesting, you know, possibility.
Harry, my doorman in the building I grew up in, he used to get on the bus every weekend and go to Pimlico. Pimlico?
Yeah.
Down to sure. Baltimore.
Yeah. Pimlico.
So he went on the gambling bus. And this would be the gambling train. This train don't carry no gamblers. This train.
Mm. Well, this is the latest. This is the latest set of details about the proposal for Rensselaer. They're trying to gain some traction. They say it'd be a great location, great idea. Even Albany Common Council President Carolyn McLaughlin was at the meeting in Rensselaer, hoping that some residents of Albany can benefit from this through jobs or some other promises. You still have the site in East Greenbush. That is being proposed by folks associated with the Saratoga Raceway. You have a plan for Schoharie County at Howe Caverns, which hasn't been detailed yet, but that'll be my next visit to the roundtable.
Yeah. Well, here's Chartok's law. The poorer the community, the more likely they are not to raise political objections. Therefore, East Greenbush has a sizable proportion of people who are whispering in my ear, we don't want this. And it is interesting, it would be interesting to see if Rensselaer, which has real challenges, is in that same boat. I suspect it'll be easier to get one in there.
Yeah, they supported the referendum, but you bring up a good point. These casinos may tend to be located in areas where there's a high level of poverty, which is not going to, in the long run, service the poor population. Many people complained about that when the referendum was up, and it passed, and now we're going to see that perhaps happen, which will be kind of sad.
When is the deadline?
It's going to hurt them.
Well, the 30th of June to submit.
Okay, so now I thought that there was a deadline prior. Schenectady was under the wire, and now we hear about Rensselaer. I thought the deadline had passed.
Oh, no. They had to come out
with a few months ago,
with $1 million, and they all anteed up the million.
Even Rensselaer?
Dollars. Yes. Yes, Rensselaer was, well, the developer David Flom had anteed up for Albany, and I wonder if that transfers over. That's a good question. I don't actually know the technical. But the Rensselaer was in the early mix, and it remains in it through the magic of the Gaming Commission's rules.
And I think I was reading in your paper that there's another larger, is it $50 million that has to be paid,
right,
and Amsterdam wants that cut?
That's correct. The in the capital region, in order to continue, they have to pony up another $50 million.
Whoa.
And Amsterdam is, the proposal for Montgomery County is asking that they be given a break and that they only have to pony up half of that, but pay it back in a longer-term situation where they'll give a larger share of profits to the state to make up for that, and they say they deserve that special consideration because of hardship.
And what does the state say?
The meeting was just yesterday, and the State Gaming Commission has not told them yet whether they'll allow that. After the 30th, if anybody who stays in it, there'll be several months of vetting. They'll be using the $50 million to vet these plans and make sure that everything is hunky-dory, and then they'll be making the recommendations. We could have some proposed license awarding by the fall, maybe before election
day. What are you hearing about Orange County? That's the elephant in the room this situation.
We talked about that yesterday. Senator John Bonachak, who has pushed the casinos to help revitalize the Catskills, was concerned that Orange County, which is south of the Catskills of Sullivan and Ulster County, that they would get the casino licenses for the Hudson Valley in Orange County, and that would, people would only go that far, and it wouldn't do anything to help the Catskills. But,
or Albany area, or Capital Region as well.
Right, yeah.
That ain't right.
Yeah, but the Gaming Commission assured them that one of the primary intents of this constitutional amendment was to bring economic revival to economically depressed areas. Orange County generally is doing much better than the Catskills, and that was a tip that perhaps the Catskills will get a license.
Yeah, and Tom checked in, and he said, has anyone looked at what gambling has done to Atlantic City? I think we might want to look more than twice at putting a casino into the area. Let me just say, I don't believe we've ever had a conversation without one of us saying something about Atlantic City.
Or Las Vegas or the other areas around.
Yeah. Right. Yeah, the difference here, though, this would be more like in the state of Colorado, for example, where there's individual casinos that are many, many miles apart, and they're just standalone. In Atlantic City, you had, trying to recreate Las Vegas, and maybe the dynamic will be different. They argue that it will, but it
well, I think Tom's point is that everything outside of the casinos is a mess still. So any of the people who predicted that this would be an economic boon, people would go to restaurants, people would go to areas. I hate to be self-serving, but I've discussed all of this on this very subject in my column in the Berkshire Eagle this Saturday.
Oh, I'll be darned.
Run out and buy a copy.
Yeah. Or just read it to us now.
Yeah, we had 11 minutes. Go ahead. All right, so two more stories we want to get to that were on our docket, and they include things that came out of the legislative session yesterday, starting with medical marijuana.
Right. There were a couple of big deals yesterday, and one is a plan to allow medical marijuana in New York State. The governor had been resistant to a widespread availability of marijuana in New York for medical reasons, but part of the deal is that people will not be allowed to use marijuana by smoking it. It will be administered through pills or through a mist or some other way to do it. But in the process of doing that, he did broker a deal with Republicans in the Senate who are supposed to vote this morning. The Assembly has already backed it, and we'll have medical marijuana in New York. Very interesting caveat, though, if the governor himself thinks that it's not going well and he sees evidence that it's getting into the wrong hands and it's not just people with debilitating illnesses and cancer and ALS and other diseases that marijuana has been effective treating, if he finds out it's getting more widespread use, he can unilaterally cancel the program.
At any time, after the 7-year sunset?
No, he can.
Pull the plug.
Yeah, anytime. And interestingly, the one thing I haven't heard any speculation about is Big Pharma. Because obviously, if there got to be other delivery systems, and if these if this stuff turns out to have to be medically prescribed, then obviously we should look and see who's giving who money in their campaign funds.
Well, I believe that this will be homegrown marijuana. I mean, it'll be New York produced.
New York produced, right.
New York produced. Mm-hmm. And then, of course, the other big story to come out of the legislative session was regarding teacher evaluations.
Yes, teachers, the New York State United Teachers had been pressing for the hold button, so to speak, to be put on the using of data from the testing of students during the Common Core rollout to evaluate teachers. And under the current results, many teachers could be put on watch lists because the students were not performing well. The teachers union had objected to that. They have put it off for a couple of years. The State Education Commissioner John King kind of reluctantly agreed to that. The governor certainly was reluctant to do that. He had made teacher evaluations a part of the Race to the Top fund awarding, and if districts didn't provide some plan to evaluate their teachers and hold them accountable by measuring their performance in class and the performance of their students, they wouldn't get this money. And now that's been pushed off for a couple of years. The union has been successful in arguing that they shouldn't be held responsible for the poor performance of students in a very poorly rolled out Common Core curriculum.
But wait, this is very interesting because remember the recent Working Families Party convention? And you will remember that there were widespread rumors that it was the union leadership that was insisting that Cuomo get the nomination. One and one sometimes makes two. So the question is, did they get, in other words, was there a sort of a, you did something nice for me, now I do something nice for you. I mean, it's true, Cuomo wanted this thing done. And who checked in but Arne Duncan, the Commissioner of Education for the whole United States, who's in charge of Race to the Top, who they were afraid of if they got rid of this teacher tenure provision or this firing provision or this testing provision, whatever you want to call it, that they would lose the federal money. He says, no, this is just fine, said Arne Duncan. Hmm. Interesting.
It's very interesting. And it just comes a week after a judge in California essentially yeah. threw out tenure there. So, I mean, there's a lot going on in the whole, it's a very volatile issue of how to hold teachers accountable and what to do when you have results that are underachieving students. Do you blame the teachers? Do you hold them accountable? And in this particular case, not for a couple more years.
So, Alan, do you think that then Arne Duncan's statement is a sort of a subtle way of saying, well, listen, our plans here, our federal grant scheme here has not been a success?
No, I don't think he'd say that, but I think there may be some political accommodation because he sure didn't take long to check in and say to the governor and to others, no, this is not going to risk your money. I don't really know what's behind it, but it is interesting that he did it and he did it fast.
We're going to take a break, and we'll be right back and try to get to one more story before the end of the segment. We'll be right back after this short break.
Support for WAMC comes from Roosevelt Vanderbilt Historic Sites, Hyde Park, presenting daily ranger-guided tours of top cottage and new weekend tram tours of Roosevelt Farm Lane, historichydepark.org. The Catskill Mountain Foundation, presenting Second City at the Foundation's Benefit Gala on Saturday, July 12th, Orpheum Film and Performing Arts Center, Tannersville, catskillmtn.org. Horsleap Equestrian Tack Shop, Amenia, specializing in hunt country gifts, including new and consigned riding clothing, tack, horse treats, and horsewear, horsleap.com. And Ward's Nursery and Garden Center, Great Barrington, for colorful roses, delphinium, phlox, veronica, yarrow, small fruits, and deer-resistant perennials, wardsnursery.com.
All right, Alan, we have 4 minutes, and I'll let you decide. Do you want to talk about Money Remains crime-fighting tool for New York police, or do you want to talk about Charlie Rangel?
I find both of those stories fascinating. So let me give you one sentence, and then you guys do whatever you want. But Charlie Rangel, if you read the very good reporting that has been done on this race, you're finding that the polling is showing that there is a huge divide between blacks and Hispanics in the district.
Now, the overall poll shows that Rangel is up from 9 points a month ago and is now 13 points ahead overall in the race, with 47% of likely voters backing Rangel versus 34% for his opponent.
Now, but also read the numbers when you come down to how many black voters are supporting Rangel. It's something like 71 or 79%. And how many Hispanics are supporting Espelot by, I think, 23, 24%, something like that. So you have one of these situations where, despite the fact that we don't like to think this way, major groups are being supportive of their candidate. And when asked in the poll whether they would consider doing it because of that, all the people responding to the poll said, no, not us. We don't do that.
Well, and older voters, too, right? Yeah, he was ahead with older voters as well.
And the New York Times have given the endorsement to Espelot. And do any of the voters care? Does it matter?
I think the New York Times is very important, but I don't think that in these cases, a case like that, where you really have a very solidified group of people on both sides, I don't think that the New York Times decision who to support is going to work it.
All right, we have 1 minute, Alan. Do you want to go?
Did you want to make a statement on the
New York police? Did you want to make a statement
on
that?
Well, it turns out that what we've always known is happening. They're spending immense amounts of money. The way they solve crimes
$18 million.
They pay people to squeal, and they get results as a result. And who can argue with results? But it's like a really bad habit. You know, you start doing it, and then how do you stop? And do you really ever do it the old-fashioned crime-fighting way?
This is the program Crime Stoppers. In the last 6 years, the police department and programs like Crime Stoppers have paid at least $18 million for information, though overall payments have declined. Huh. We are out of time. We would love to keep the conversation going, though. Roundtable at WAMC.org if you would like to share your thoughts. Roundtable at WAMC.org. Mike Spain, Ray Graff, Alan Chartok, thank you all for being with us. Have a lovely weekend, and we'll talk on Monday.
To all of you.
You too.
Thank you very much. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.